I'll give you 5 more
seconds. If you tried to describe what God is like, it could be difficult or daunting. But when the people who wrote the Bible pondered the mystery of God, they consistently described God's character in this way: compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, overflowing with loyal love and faithfulness. The very first word used in this description of God is compassionate, or in Hebrew, rachum. This word also appears as a noun, rachamim, or compassion. And what's fascinating is that both of these words are related to the Hebrew word for womb, rechem. So compassion in the Hebrew Bible is centered on a person's core, and the word invites us to imagine a mother's tender feelings for her vulnerable infant. So rachum is a word that conveys intense emotion. Sometimes it's even translated as deeply moved, like in the story of King Solomon, who meets 2 women who've just given birth. One of their babies sadly dies, but then both women claim that the baby still living is theirs. As a test, Solomon says to cut the baby in 2 and give each mother a half. And the baby's real mother is deeply moved. She would rather the other woman take her baby than see her child die. And it's her compassion that reveals that she's the true mother. But rachum isn't just an emotional word. It also involves action. And surprisingly, the word is used most often to describe God's actions motivated by his emotions. Like when the Israelites are suffering and oppressed in Egypt, God hears their cries and is compelled by his compassion, his rachamim, to rescue them. Then, as the Israelites travel through the dangerous wilderness, they're hungry and thirsty, and God is rachum, caring for them as his own child. He provides everything they need, food, water, and clothing, as he personally guides them. So it's no surprise that when Yahweh reveals his character to the Israelites in the wilderness, he begins by saying he's compassionate. But despite Yahweh's continual rachamim, the Israelites turn away from him time and again. They reject Yahweh's compassion and instead give their allegiance to other gods. And rather than showing compassion to each other, they do violence. And their rebellion results in exile, and they're scattered among the nations. And it's in this dark moment in Israel's story that we come to the book of Isaiah, where Yahweh compares himself to a mother full of rachamim toward her baby. He says, "Can a mother forget her nursing child, or have no compassion or rachamim on the child of her womb? Even if she forgets, I will not forget you." God is full of motherly compassion, and he will rescue his people. And as you read further in Isaiah, you realize that God is going to do this by entering into the suffering of humanity. And this points forward to a time when Jesus comes on the scene. He is Yahweh's deep compassion become human. In Greek, the word compassion is oiktirmos. And as Jesus embraces the sick and cares for the outcast, he is deeply moved by human suffering. Jesus compares himself to a mother hen using her wings to shield her chicks from danger as he gathers people into his embrace. And in the ultimate expression of oiktirmos, Jesus is moved by compassion to enter into humanity's suffering, into death itself, to rescue and bring us near to God. And it's this same life of compassion that Jesus calls his followers to imitate, allowing ourselves to be moved by the pain of others, to embrace the hurting, and to participate in relieving suffering in the world. In this way, we too can embody the compassion of Yahweh, or in Jesus' words, be compassionate, just as your Father is compassionate. Now you can see how fitting it is that compassionate is the first word God uses to describe himself. So when we're in pain or see others suffering, we can be certain that God is deeply moved to respond and that he's there to meet us with his deep compassion.
So good. Was worth the wait. Thank you, Darrell and Kaylee. I would not want to be behind the scenes figuring out the text, so thank you guys for that. That's just a great overview of the theme that we're going to look at today, the theme of compassion. That's by the Bible Project. If you're not familiar with their stuff, check it out. Just great videos and overviews of themes, of books of the Bible, of word. That was a word study video that just traces this idea of compassion. And so now, to introduce myself a little bit, just some pictures here to give you a glimpse of my family, a little bit of where I'm from, where I've been, the 2027 Super Bowl champions. I'll just share all of that stuff up in there, just to give you a glimpse, a little bit about me. I'm curious who's with us in the room today. So two claps if you're part of the day camp staff. Nobody's here from the day camp staff. Okay. Two claps if you're full-time staff here at Spruce Lake. Okay, that was weak, but all right, no problem. Two claps if you're just camping here for the week or the weekend. Okay, very good. Two claps if you haven't clapped yet. Okay, good. That should be everyone there. So welcome. Good to have you with us. We're going to look at this theme of compassion, and we're going to specifically look at it in the book of Proverbs. But first, let me put this picture up and ask if this brings up any fond memories of your childhood. Any wiffle ball memories come to mind? I have several. We had lots of time in the backyard playing wiffle ball. My dad's here with us, and one of my favorite memories. One time, he went over and above with the lawn mowing, and he mowed most of our backyard. He kind of raised the deck and mowed it kind of normal height, and then he lowered the deck and actually mowed a path for the bases. You know, from home plate to first and to second. I still remember that, you know. Turned our backyard into a really real official wiffle ball, field. So that was cool. My last time playing wiffle ball, as far as I can remember, I was a senior in high school. It was probably late spring, early summer. School was still in session. I was a senior, like I said. We were having some church picnic, and I was pitching. And so I pitched the ball, and if this were ESPN, well, let's be real, ESPN3, you know, or something like that, and the batter hits it, and it comes back directly at me and hits me right in the eye, right? And so I get, you know, smashed in the face with a wiffle ball. I must have gone to a doctor or some urgent care clinic, something like that, because I remember actually getting a diagnosis, traumatic iritis. Which kind of sounds made up, doesn't it? Right? It's like you go in and you twisted your knee and they said, ah, yes, that is traumatic knee twistiness. Really? Like hit yourself with the hammer on your thumb. Ah, yes, traumatic hammer clumsiness. That's what that is. I don't know if that's a real diagnosis. But anyway, my whole eye turned red. And this was like 2 days before my senior prom. And so I remember having the tux and the suit and everything, and my girlfriend looked great, and my eye matched her red dress. That's what I remember from that. But it worked, right, because she has a heart of compassion, and that girl became my wife. And next week we'll celebrate 27 years of marriage. So that's a good wiffle ball memory. Yes, thank you. But earlier, much earlier than that, when I was just learning the rules of wiffle ball, I remember learning the rules and then using them to my advantage, right? Because the rules were set out so that I could learn how to play the game. The rules weren't really designed for what I ended up using them for. So I have an older brother, and then at the time I had two younger sisters. I went on to have four younger sisters. But at this time, I had two younger sisters. One was about 5 years younger, the other about 7 years younger. And when they got up to bat, would you believe it? They needed way more than three strikes. And I knew the rules of wiffle ball. And so I'd be out there yelling, strike 17, you know, and we're still trying to get them to hit the ball. Strike 27, I'm yelling from the outfield, because I was a rule follower. I knew the rules of the game, but instead of just using those for my own advantage, I used those to oppress other people. And I'm afraid that sometimes what I did with the wiffle ball rules is what we do with the scripture sometimes. Right, we understand God's given us his word. He's given us a way to live, a roadmap for life. And that's for our benefit. That's to point the way to Jesus. That's to help us to find our way to God. It's not for us to use to point out how other people are failing and to point out how many strikes they have against them. And I think we see that specifically in the book of Proverbs, specifically with this idea of compassion. And I want to unpack that for you today. As we begin to cultivate compassion, I first want to describe it. I'm not going to try to define it, but at least describe it, and then we'll talk about how we can develop it. But if I were to describe compassion, I would first say that it's a reflection of God's heart. Compassion reflects God's heart. The reason that we should cultivate compassion is because God is a God of compassion. You saw that in the video. That verse that they anchor that video in comes from the book of Exodus, where God describes himself to Moses. And the first word he uses is compassionate and gracious and slow to anger and overflowing in loyal love. Exodus 34. And that verse goes on to be quoted and repeated more than 20 times throughout the Old Testament. It seems to be the Old Testament writer's favorite Bible verse, because on and on they remind us that God's character begins with compassion. And so we show compassion because it's a reflection of God's heart. Let me get some help from the audience. Somebody read this verse from Proverbs to show us a little bit about how Proverbs talks about compassion. Go ahead, loud and proud. Very good, thank you. I am serious about the reading, and we can do this the easy way or the hard way, so just be ready. The next one comes up, I want to hear from you. So what I want you to see, especially in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs has a great introduction, about 9 chapters of introducing the themes and the characters, and then most of the book of Proverbs is what we think of, these short, pithy, wise sayings that are known as Hebrew poetry. Now, we might not think of them as poetry because we think the poetry should rhyme and have meter and things like that. Hebrew poetry, it didn't necessarily rhyme in the way it sounded, although sometimes it did in the ancient language, but it rhymed in the way that they used the words, in the themes or the ideas. And so most proverbs come in couplets. In other words, there's 2 lines. They say something, and then they say something. Now, those 2 lines, they could do 3 things. This is going to help you later. Those 2 lines could repeat. Let me hear you say repeat. Repeat, very good. So the first line says something, and the second line essentially says the same thing. They can repeat. They can also reverse. Let me hear you say reverse. Reverse. That is not a repeat. That's the opposite. First line says something, and the second line says the opposite. So keep an eye out for that. And the third thing they can do, repeat, reverse, result. Let me hear you say result. Result. If you like it better, you could even go with respond. But the first line says something, and then here's the result of that. Or if this happens, then this is going to happen. So as you read Proverbs, just make a mental note of what the poetry looks like. Is it a repeat? Is it a reverse? Is it a result? So what's this one? Pop quiz. Someone over here. Is this a repeat? Is he saying the same thing twice, or is he reversing, or is he giving a result? Result. Okay, good. It's showing us that here's what happens, and here's the result of it. All right, very good. Whoever just said result, go ahead and read us the next proverb. What's that one? I would say another result. Right? Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and what's going to happen as a response? God will reward them for that. So both of these proverbs look at the fact that when we show kindness, we're doing to other people what God would be doing to them. We're having the same heart for others that God has for others. We're kind of lending to them on God's behalf. And so the first idea I want you to see about compassion is that compassion is a reflection of God's heart. And we see this so clearly in the person of Jesus. Jesus shows us the image of God. Jesus shows us how God would act and who God would like and what God is like. And I want you to notice the number of times as you read through the Gospels that we see Jesus moved with compassion. And then it would go on to say that, you know, he saw the crowds and he was moved with compassion. He saw a man with a deformity and he was moved with compassion. He saw the people of Jerusalem and he was moved with compassion. And then the verse goes on and says what he did. He healed them, he fed them, he took care of them. And I love that idea. And often there's the comma there, Jesus, comma, moved with compassion. Then it goes on to say what he did. But I love also imagining what it would be like if you got rid of the comma. Right? And then you just used moved as a verb. Jesus moved with compassion. He simply moved around with compassion. That's what led him to come in the first place. From heaven he came running. There was mercy in his eyes, is the lyric of one of my favorite songs. Jesus moved with compassion. And because he was moved with compassion, that led to action. And so every time we act with compassion, it really is a reflection of God's heart. But that's not all, right? Compassion is a reflection of God's heart. Compassion is also a snapshot of who we want to be. It's a snapshot of who we want to be. It gives us a glimpse, a little thumbnail sketch of our desired future self. And so many Proverbs point to this. So many of the Proverbs look ahead and they say, if you live like this, here's how your life's going to work out. If you act like this, here's how you're going to become. Here's what a fool looks like. Here's what a person of wisdom looks like. Here's what the righteous look like. Here's what the wicked look like. And it gives us these pictures of our future selves so that we know how to live now. And we live now with our eye on the future. And if we want to become that kind of person, well, here's what we need to do now. And so compassion is one of those things. If you were to imagine how you would like to be remembered, if you were to imagine how you want other people to think of you, how you present yourself to others, compassion is part of that list. Somebody on this side, read this next proverb, Proverbs 29:7, a snapshot of who we want to become, loud and proud. Now, is that a repeat, a reverse, or a result? A reverse. Very good. You can, those ones are easy to find because there's that button in the middle. The righteous care about justice for the poor. That's just who the righteous are. That's what they do. But if you were to flip that over, the wicked have no such concern. And then as we start to look at that and see those opposites, we start to say, wait a second. Am I on this side of the equation or that side? Right? It's a reflection. It's a snapshot of who we want to become. So compassion is, what's the first idea? A reflection of God's heart. Compassion, secondly, is what? A snapshot of who we want to become. And third, compassion paints a portrait of our connection to others. Compassion paints a portrait of our connection with others. Compassion is the oil that kind of keeps things moving smoothly, right? Left to ourselves, we're going to rub people the wrong way. We're going to grind some gears. Things are going to get messy. Things are going to get complicated, right? But compassion becomes the oil that allows us to navigate people with a lot more ease. Compassion becomes, right, the base that keeps things from getting too acidic. Compassion is the blue cheese that helps the hot wings not be too overpowering, right? Compassion just helps us interact with others. Because it gets us to the point where we realize, yeah, I understand what you're going through. Several years ago, I ran into some of the work by Brené Brown. I heard her speak, and she has some viral TED Talks. And she's a shame researcher. And she researches how shame keeps us locked up and how it affects how we interact with others. And she said something so powerful. She said the two most powerful words when we are hurting are me too. Me too. Right, when we're hurting, when other people are hurting, when we are in struggle, the two most powerful words when we're in struggle are me too. To have someone come alongside us and say, you're not alone. And not that they understand everything, every nuance of the situation, that would be impossible. But to at least say, I know how you're feeling. I've been disappointed too. I've been let down too. I've gotten some bad news as well. I've been betrayed by people that I trusted also. And when we come alongside others and when we have that a kind of community where we say, me too, and we get down and we bear up, we bear that burden along with other people, that compassion, that paints a portrait of who God wants us to be. And so compassion reflects God's heart. Compassion gives us a snapshot of who we want to become. And then compassion is a portrait of our connection with others. Let me just help to illustrate this a little bit by showing you some other snapshots and portraits and pictures. My grandfather passed away in 2017. And so he was about 94 at the time. And here's a cool story that I bet most people cannot tell. When I got married to that same girl I took to the senior prom, the night before our wedding was what? our wedding rehearsal. And at that wedding rehearsal and at that rehearsal dinner, my grandfather came. My grandmother had passed away by that point. He had outlived not one, but two spouses at that point. Well, also at that rehearsal dinner was my wife's grandmother, who had also outlived two spouses at that point. And the wise among you see where this is going. My 75-year-old grandmother meets my wife's 76-year-old grandmother, and 1 year later, in the same church where I got married, our grandparents got married. And everybody said, aww, right? Isn't that so cool? I actually went on double dates. My wife and I went on double dates with our grandparents. And they were just giddy schoolgirl kids back in the back. So things got a little weird because that meant our moms were stepsisters and then we became cousins on our first anniversary. But we're not going to think about that right now. We're just going to think about the great, and then they had another, you know, almost 15, 20 years together after that, which was so fantastic. But my grandfather passed away when he was 94. Grandma made it until 99 and 9 months, by the way. But as you see these pictures of my grandpa, you get a sense, you get a little reflection of his character, right? You get a sense of the kind of person he was, right? Just a glimpse of it. And then as I look at those pictures, I'm reminded of who I want to be, right? It provides a snapshot that I can, you know, look up to, something that I want to be when I grow up, somehow someone that how I want to be remembered. And then you can also see from those pictures that he's got an impact on the people around him, right? They lean in, they laugh, they smile. He has that kind of impact. And so just with some pictures, we get a reflection of who he is. We get a snapshot of who I want to become. And we get a portrait of how he affected the people around him. That's what compassion does. Compassion changes the picture. Compassion reminds us of what God is like. Compassion puts us on a path towards who we want to be. And compassion greases the wheels between us. Compassion makes our relationships with each other worth living. And so that's my best way of describing or defining compassion. But how do we develop it? How do we move in that direction? If that really is a snapshot and a reflection and a portrait, how do we make that more a part of our lives? So I want to explain three shifts that we need to make. And the first one is this, from not seeing to seeing. From not seeing to seeing. Friends, if you haven't come across people who are hurting and challenged and struggling, it's not because they're not out there. It's because you're not seeing them. It's not because they're not out there, because they are. We are. Everyone is. We're all broken. We're all struggling. We're all hurting with something. Some of us maybe more than others. Some of us may be having lots of things going well, but nobody has everything going great. Some people hide it better than others, but everyone you ever lock eyes with is broken and struggling in some way with their relationship with God, with their relationship with others, just in the way they're navigating the challenge of a broken world. And if you're not noticing that, it's not because it's not there. It's just because we're not seeing it. And so the first shift has to be from not seeing to seeing. And if it helps, I want you to just imagine a label on everyone that you ever see. And the label is this: fragile. Handle with care. You've seen those on your packages. I think the UPS guy kind of ignores them, but you've seen them on your brown boxes. But imagine that on the forehead of everyone you interact with, or along their shoulders, or, you know, right across their eyes. Fragile. Handle with care. That's everyone. That's all of us. And we need to make the shift from not seeing to seeing. Listen to how the Proverbs say it in Proverbs chapter 28, 27. Someone on this side, read this one loud and proud. That's a reversal, right? The opposite of giving to the poor is what? Closing our eyes to them. And you can see the results that come from both of those. Blessing and curse, simply by opening our eyes and then opening our hands. Very good, thank you. Someone on this side, read this one from Proverbs 24. It's a long one, but you got it. I believe in you. Oh, we'll come back to it. Come back to that one, would you, Darrell? 24:12 from the NLT. Thank you. Don't pretend we don't know. God knows that we knew. And this was true thousands of years ago. I don't know if something can be more true, but we know. We know the challenges that people have. We have access to, perhaps unfortunately, to everything going on anywhere in the world. We know that our neighbors are struggling. We know that people in our community are far from God. We know that some people are struggling to make ends meet. We know that there are children that don't have access to clean water. We know that there are people that don't have the medical attention that they need. And this can get really overwhelming really quickly, and that's not my goal, and that's not God's goal. The point is not for us to try to meet every need and fix every problem. No one could do that. But the point is to at least open our eyes to who God has put in our circle, in our neighborhood, in our dorm room, on our block, or on our team at work. Open our eyes and recognize this person is fragile, handle with care. We make this shift from not seeing to seeing because compassion changes the way we see people. Compassion changes the way we see people. That's the first shift that we need to make. And Jesus tells this remarkable story in Luke chapter 10 that's just a perfect illustration of compassion, and so we'll keep coming back to it. And Rembrandt captured it so well in this portrait, right? There's a man who's traveling this road, this well-known road from Jerusalem to Jericho, when he falls among robbers, right? These bandits, and they beat him within an inch of his life, and they steal his money, and they leave him for dead. And what happens next? A priest comes by and acts like he doesn't even see him. And a Levite comes by and acts like he doesn't even see him. And they move to the other side of the road and they move on. And then a Samaritan, of all people, the sworn enemy of the Jews, of this man, you know, anyone would think this is not going to be the hero of the story. And yet the Samaritan, he doesn't see his race. He doesn't see the danger. He doesn't see that this guy probably got what he deserved. He doesn't see that he might be next. He shifts from not seeing to seeing. He sees the need. That's the first shift that he makes. And we'll come back to his story later, but I just want you to see that this first idea is from not seeing to seeing. The second shift is from they're probably getting what they deserve to I didn't get what I deserve. Right? This shift goes internal, doesn't it? The first shift, we notice what's going on out there. We see people and we see the struggle. We see the pain. But the second shift goes internal and says, what's going on in my heart? What's happening in my heart when I see the poor, when I see the needy, when I see the sick? What's happening in me? And I'm not proud to admit that in my heart, there's often pride. There's often thoughts of, well, they probably deserve what they're getting. Or, well, if they hadn't been so reckless with their money, they wouldn't be in this situation. If they hadn't made those choices that they made, they wouldn't be reaping these consequences. I'm not proud of that, but let's be honest. That's what often goes through my mind. And honestly, if we're being real honest, if they were more like me, they wouldn't be in this situation. Maybe you can relate. Maybe not. Maybe this is just confession for me. And all of those things may be true, honestly. Those of you that are parents, we struggle with this, right? From letting our kids deal with the consequences of their choices to letting them feel the results of their actions, there may be a time and a place for that. But when someone is hurting, when someone is in pain, what's needed right now is compassion. Those conversations may need to be had. They may need to be had again. But in this moment, what's most helpful is compassion. And I'll tell you why I say that. Because that's how God treats me. when I deserve something so much less. Listen, one of you could please read what Jesus says in Luke chapter 6, verse 36. And the NLT says you must show compassion just as your Father shows compassion. Right? Not because they deserve it, but because we've received it. We don't offer compassion because it's what they deserve. We offer compassion because we have received compassion. Paul would go on to say the same thing to the Ephesians, right? He says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ forgave you. This is why this is such a significant shift, because we're not dealing with people as they deserve. We're dealing with people as God has treated us. And so the first shift goes from not seeing to seeing. The second shift goes from they probably deserve what they're getting to I didn't deserve what I'm getting. You see, compassion changes the way we see people. Compassion also changes the way we judge people. Compassion changes the way we judge people. It changes what we see. It also changes what's happening in our heart. And I believe that the Good Samaritan went through this same process, or at least could have. Right, as he sees the man beaten on the road, he could have excused himself in 100 different ways. The Levite did, and the priest did. He could have said, oh man, maybe this guy was trying to rob someone else, and they just retaliated and left him for dead. He could have said, this guy might have deserved it. Maybe this guy, he shouldn't have been traveling this way. He should have known better. He was probably flaunting his wealth, you know, and kind of showing off. He probably brought this on himself. He could have come up with so many different ways to excuse himself, to say maybe this guy got what he deserved, and if I'm not careful, I might get attacked as well. But he didn't. He didn't do any of that. He judged him differently, and he moved with compassion. So, when it comes to that first shift, my question for you is, what's blocking your vision? What's keeping you from seeing people with compassion? And then my question here is, what's hardening your heart? What's keeping you from showing the kind of love to others that God has shown to us? So we need to shift. We need to first shift from not seeing to seeing. We need to shift from they're probably getting what they deserve to I didn't get what I deserve. And then we need a final shift. And compassion isn't complete until we then shift from feeling to action. From feeling to action. It's not compassion unless there's some action. Unless you do something. It may be pity, it may be sympathy, it may be empathy, but it's not compassion until there's a response, until we move and take action. Listen to some proverbs about this. Someone on this side, read this one loud and proud. Someone from this side, let's read the next. Good, good. Let's keep going. Back to this side. We have two more here. Very good. And last one on this side. Every one of those has action involved. Speaking up, standing up, giving food, giving compassion, giving to the needy, taking care of others, rescuing the innocent. This isn't compassion until it takes action. Because compassion changes the way we see people, it changes the way we judge people, and then finally, it changes the way we treat people. It changes the way we treat people. We need to make that shift as well, right? We need to move into action. And again, I don't want you to be overwhelmed by this. There's way more opportunity than we'll be able to do. But just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you shouldn't do something. Just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you shouldn't do something. Not even Jesus helped everyone. Now, don't throw me out. His death was good for everyone. But think about Jesus when he was with us on this planet. He did not heal everyone who was sick in first century Jerusalem. He did not feed everyone who was hungry. He fed a lot of people on a couple different occasions, but some others went hungry. Some others continued to have sickness and illness. He didn't raise everyone from the dead. Even Jesus, in his humanity, limited himself. So don't think that you need to help or heal or fix everybody. But God has brought some people in your sphere of influence. So open your eyes and open your heart and then take action. Now, I've spent, prior to my job now as a teacher, I spent 20 years as a pastor. And a lot of that work was in global ministry. And so I just feel the need to add one word here. And we need to move from feeling to wise action. To wise action. Because so much is done with good intentions that ultimately causes some harm, especially when we start working internationally. Right? We need to have wise action. We do need to take action. But we need to stay connected with the local leadership. We need to understand the problem. We need to realize that what we're offering is actually going to be a long-term solution. So much can be said. So much has and can be written on this. In fact, I even wrote a book on this. So if you're into global ministry, if you're into what God's doing around the world, I have some copies available in the back. It's the yellow one on the right. A friend of mine who founded and led a nonprofit organization in Kenya and Haiti and Uganda, he wrote the one on the left called If You Really Want to Help. And if I could summarize the best wisdom of global leaders, it's help in personal ways and in relational ways. Offer compassion in ways that are personal and relational. Get involved more than just sending a check or throwing money at something, right? Get involved relationally. And isn't that exactly what the Good Samaritan did? One last look at the Good Samaritan is that he didn't help from a distance. He got close. He bandaged the wounds himself, he poured oil on them, and he cleaned the things. And then he connected with local leaders, the innkeeper, the local medical community. He offered his own money, and then he said, I'll circle back later and see how things are going. Right? He offered some wise help that was going to be a long-term benefit. And so we need to make those same kinds of shifts. And so my question here is, what's holding you back? What's holding you back from taking that step, from writing that note, from offering that encouragement, from writing that check, from moving in from feelings to action? I'll offer just two suggestions if you're looking for ways to do this globally. I don't know your local community. Otherwise, you would need to figure out, okay, who is doing this locally? How is our church involved? What other nonprofits are here in our community? But globally speaking, if you want to help the plight of abused women and children, She Is Safe is a fantastic organization that is rescuing and restoring and preventing human trafficking in some of the hardest places in the world. And then I mentioned that book, if you really want to help, the director and the founder of that organization is called the 410 Bridge, and they're working around the world in helpful and healthy ways to show compassion in the developing world. And I'll tell you, it was my interaction with the 410 Bridge that really helped me to make these three shifts in my own life and in my own heart. We started partnering in a community in Kenya. And not long after that, we learned about their sponsorship program. And my son, as a 9-year-old, got to meet this young man named Lamech as he was about 9 or 10 years old. And we began a sponsorship opportunity with Lamech because things were good, but they were just running into some hurdles, right? His family didn't quite have the funds that they needed to buy the school uniform sweater. His school didn't have quite the funds they needed to get the curriculum, to have clean water access. And so for $39 a month, we were able to sponsor Lamech. And on my very last trip to Kenya, just 1 year ago, I got to meet with him again. He's now graduated from high school. Our sponsorship has ended. He's gone on to graduate from college and now has a degree in civil engineering and is continuing on in that path. All because of a few shifts, right? Where we didn't see to then we started to see. And we were judging one way and then we started judging things differently. And we moved from inaction to action. And you could do the same. whether it's child sponsorship, whether it's other opportunities in your own community, you also can make these shifts from not seeing to seeing, from they're probably getting what they deserve to I didn't get what I deserve, and then finally from feeling to action. That's what compassion looks like. And that's how God has changed and reshaped our lives, and that's how he's inviting us to continue that work, to be a part of his change and his redemption in the lives of others. And so our response is to simply ask him, God, would you please open my eyes? Help me to see who you want me to see. God, would you soften my heart? Would you help me to feel the way towards others the way you feel towards them? That's the goal. We know our heart is in the right place when we feel towards others the way God feels towards them. And so God, open my eyes. God, soften my heart, and then God, move me to action. I was thinking of putting another, body part in that last idea, but I don't know which one it is for you, right? Maybe it's your mouth. Maybe it's speaking words of compassion. Maybe it's your ears, and it's listening with compassion. Maybe it's your checkbook, right, and it's offering donations. Maybe it's your hands, and it's serving. Maybe it's your feet and it's going. Maybe it's your calendar and it's making time. I don't know what that is for you, but God, please open our eyes, please soften our hearts, and please move us to action. Let me pray that for all of us now. Heavenly Father, thank you for not treating us as our sins deserved. Thank you for not looking the other way when we were dead in sin, when we had turned our back on you. God, thank you for seeing us. God, thank you for not judging us and treating us accordingly, but for showing compassion, showing so much grace, so much love toward us. And God, I thank you that you didn't just feel those things, but you moved into action in the person of Jesus. And God, I pray that we would follow your lead in each of those ways, that we would see the people around us and just know that they're fragile, know that they're hurting. God, I pray that you would shift our hearts from judgment to grace, and then shift us from feeling to action so that we would take the steps that you're calling us to take, to be your hands and feet, to move out in compassion to the world around us. It's in your name we pray. Amen.